In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes, indeed. It's time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us in studio for Pass the Popcorn. Hello, Al. Welcome.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I mean, I say welcome. You're actually in the studio. Yeah, I'm home living the good life.
That's right. Living large. Love it.
Just trying to keep you and Carrie safe because that's the kind of compassionate guy I am.
It's almost like if everybody behaved responsibly, things would be much better.
Imagine that, huh? Yeah. How was your weekend?
It was good. We sort of did our big Valentine's Day celebrating type stuff on the weekend because, you know, Valentine's Day on a Monday makes it tough to do anything out and about. But yeah, it was lovely. And, you know, and then yesterday, I spent a lot of time, working, and then I watched, two halves of OK Football surrounding just a banger of a halftime show.
Yes, I agree. That's actually my good and the good, bad and ugly. And, you know, I'm not, that's not exactly, my wheelhouse as a rule, but man, that was top three all time.
Yeah, no, I like, you know, and I said something, I alluded to this online, but, you know, to me, like, Prince is still number one, like, just because I don't think, I don't know how you top that. But this is definitely in that conversation. It was just, you know, and just like, there was the stuff that you kind of knew was coming, and then all of a sudden, you know, here's 50 Cent dropping out of the ceiling. It's like, what is going on? I don't understand.
And Dr. Dre on the keyboards, that was the part that got me.
Yeah, it's just a reminder of just how wildly talented all of these guys are, you know, despite those out there who would happily dismiss their abilities for, well, we'll just say reasons.
Yes, reasons. Curious. I wonder what those oh, I think we know. Let's talk about movies. You got to see three of them. Where would you like to begin?
Well, let's start with, you know what, it's Valentine's Day. Let's start with Marry Me.
Good, because I can't wait to hear what you think of this.
As you know, and anyone who reads my reviews knows, I am a proponent of the romantic comedy. I love a good rom-com, always have. But I think in recent years we've seen that the studios aren't necessarily as inclined to make those sorts of movies anymore. And what this means is our friends at Netflix and other streaming services have sort of swooped in to fill that void with their algorithms and their YouTube influencers and whatnot. And it's just, I don't know, it's fine. Like, I'm glad the genre lives on, but it's not necessarily what it used to be. Certainly not what I remember it being. But this is a major studio release starring an A-list celebrity. So it's nice to kind of, it feels like a little bit of a throwback in that way. Plus, it had the added bonus of being available day and date on the Peacock streaming service as well as in theaters. I watched it at home. I'm sure a lot of other people did, particularly those of us who signed up for Peacock solely because of the Olympics. And for this to drop right into the middle of that was just a wonderful sort of added bonus. But here's the thing. It's actually pretty good. Like, not great. It's not a great movie. It's exactly what you think it is in terms of formula. Like, it's very much a very predictable kind of movie, kind of corny. But sometimes that's what you want, you know, especially with this sort of movie. So the basic gist is... Jennifer Lopez stars as a global pop superstar. So, you know, to stretch, named Kat Valdez, hugely successful as a musician, unlucky in love. Like, that's kind of her reputation. She's unlucky in love. And so she finally thinks she's got it worked out. She's going to do she's done this duet with her current beau, a fellow pop singer named Bastion, played by another real-life another real life pop star who I'd never heard of before. So you got that going for you. They have this duet. That's the song is "Marry Me." They're gonna do this concert that's live streamed to millions of people, and as the sort of the grand finale of this duet, they're going to get married on stage after the song. Like that's the plan. Everybody's on board. She is, he is, her manager, her entire team, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, we've got Charlie Gibbs, and that's Owen Wilson plays Charlie Gibbs. He's a math teacher at a public high school in New York City. Perfectly nice guy. He's divorced, but has an amiable relationship with his ex. They share custody of his young daughter, a young lady named Lou, who loves her dad, but is frightfully embarrassed by him, as daughters tend to be of their fathers. And then, you know, through standard rom-com shenanigans, the two of them wind up at the concert where Kat Valdez is going to marry Bastion and this whole thing. But then, just as she's getting ready to go on for the song, news breaks and there's a video on the internet of Bastion cheating with Kat's assistant. And so she blows the whole thing up. She's like, I'm not going to marry this guy. But then she kind of has a little bit of a, not a breakdown, but she starts to wander a little bit, and she sees our man Charlie standing there in the crowd holding a homemade "Marry Me" sign that has been handed to him by someone else. And she's like, yeah, all right, you, I'll marry you. And so he gets pulled up on stage, and being a generally good guy, he kind of goes along with it because he can see that she's in distress. And then he's whisked away, and the manager, the news cycle is all over her. The manager's like, okay, we'll pay him off, we'll get rid of him, and we'll wait for this to all blow over. And her take is, well, what if I just stay married to him for a while? Like, what if I do that? Again, just one of many, rom-com nonsensical decisions that happen over the course of this movie. And so they stay together, and it's like they do a bunch of publicity appearances. But, well, Rich, as you know, in these movies, proximity equals affection. And so the more time they spend with each other, the more they're like, oh yeah. And then they start to like each other, and then hijinks ensue. I'm not going to go into the specifics because I don't want to spoil anything, despite the fact that I'm sure you could almost certainly follow the plot of this movie from where I stopped to its end pretty easily. I say all this, but it was really pretty charming. Like it's a decently written movie. The casting, I think, is probably the most inspired part, because you want to make a movie about like beautiful, glamorous pop star, winds up like dealing with ordinary random schlub. I mean, I don't know how much better you're going to do than Jennifer Lopez, right, and Owen Wilson. You know what I mean?
How's the chemistry between them?
That was something that concerned me as well. And it's actually pretty good. Although I will say, like, they're very comfortable together. Although I would argue that maybe it's almost more of a platonic chemistry than a romantic chemistry. But it still works. Like, and there's a real click there. And with rom-coms, it's all about the click. And if you got the click, you're three quarters of the way there. Like I said, it's goofy, it's corny. There are no surprises that you're going to find here. But as far as, sweet sort of romantic comedies go, you could do a lot worse. There's some romance, there's some laughs. There are only a couple of really terrible people, and that's always kind of nice. So, Marry Me. Not so bad.
All right. That's the story on Marry Me. A couple more to discuss. What's next?
Let's talk about, I don't know. I don't know which one I want to do. We'll just do it now. So Blacklight. It's the latest in the increasingly active Jerry Action subgenre of action movie. Because our man Liam Neeson's back. And he's a law enforcement agent who is forced to do some work, sort of outside the bounds of the rules, But when he does that, he finds himself wound up into some sort of conspiracy that reaches the highest echelons of power, Rich, and it's up to him and only him to protect those who are closest to him and, you know, make sure he and they get out of it alive. I'm not. You may have heard
that one. He has a very particular set of skills.
And, man, like, he really, like, it's I honestly think sometimes Liam Neeson thinks he's the Taken guy. Because he just keeps making these movies, like he keeps making them, and they're not. I mean, it's eerie how similar they are. Like it's almost like a Mad Libs approach to making these movies. Like it's like, okay, what's I am insert name Travis Block, and I work for the insert alphabet agency FBI, and I am involved in a conspiracy, and it's just like, and then they just sort of. Set up the cameras and let her rip. Honestly, the only thing surprising about this movie is that it had a theatrical release and didn't go straight to Netflix. Like that's the biggest shock for me on this one. I mean, I'll talk you through it just because, you know, why not? So again, as I said, Travis Block, he works for the FBI, but he's not an FBI agent. He's a fixer for the FBI. Specifically, his longtime friend, is the director of the FBI, of course, played by Aidan Quinn. Nice to see Aidan Quinn.
Yeah.
And so whenever one of the FBI's deep cover agents gets into trouble, they get in too deep and they can't get out. Well, they send in Travis Block to take care of business. And so he rescues them from whatever cult or white supremacist compound or what have you that they're trapped in. And brings them in for, rescues them physically and then brings them in for an emotional debriefing of sorts. But as you might imagine, the rigors and unpredictability of the job, you know, they have consequences. You know, it means that he's got a distant relationship with his daughter and he really wants to become, to develop more closeness with his granddaughter. The mom has some questions because she knows what her dad does for a living and she can see his paranoia and whatnot sort of creeping into her daughter's personality as well. But then there's another deep cover agent with the absolutely phenomenal name of Dusty Crane, who turns up out of nowhere. He's clearly agitated, and he tries to go to the media with information that he has derived during his time undercover. The FBI director, he doesn't want that. He does not want that. He doesn't want whatever this guy knows being out there into the world. When Travis Block finds out what that information is, he realizes that, you know what? Maybe there's more to all of this than meets the eye.
Okay.
Look, man, it's very much like paint by numbers filmmaking. It's each of the pieces... has been brought from another movie and they're all just sort of slotted together. I will say, we mentioned his particular set of skills. He has an additional skill in this movie that we haven't seen before. Rich, it's one of those things where the more I think about it, the more off-putting I find it. Basically, they make it so he has some form of obsessive compulsive disorder. And that gives him like FBI powers. Like it's not clear exactly how OCD makes him better at his job, but they really go to that well fairly frequently in this movie. And it's just like, come on, guys! Like,
wow!
That just rubbed me the wrong way. And like I said, as I've spent more time sort of thinking about it, not a ton of time thinking about it, if I'm honest about it, because the sooner Blacklight gets pushed to the back and out the and out the door, the better. But it's just one of those. It just feels a little icky, and it's not the sort of thing that's necessary.
Right.
I will say, and it's got action sequences. You know, there's a car chase that feels like they're just going around the same two blocks like four or five times, you get to see him throw a couple of creaky punches, Oh man, there are a couple of foot chases and it's like, what are you doing to poor Liam? Like this dude is old. Like, why are you making him run? And he runs like he's exactly as old as he is. And so you're just watching him chase this like this fit like 30-year-old dude down the street, and you're like, okay, yeah, no, I buy this. Like in a film filled with unbelievable things, this is probably the least believable of it, of all of it. So yeah, Blacklight.
All right, well, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Hopefully better news about the remake of Death on the Nile.
You know, I'm a fan of Kenneth Branagh generally, and I do kind of like what he's doing, sort of this effort to, I don't know, create like a Hercule Poirot cinematic universe. Like he's really trying to franchise this baby, and good for him. Like he clearly loves the source material, which for a movie like this is a big part of the battle. To you know, his affection for it. Both, you know, it comes through, I think, both in his performance and his work behind the camera, because, you know, he also directs these films. You know, it's tricky. Death on the Nile is tricky, not because of anything specifically about the movie as it is, so much as the fact that, you know, I mean, is Branagh psyched that one of the primary stars of his movie turned out to be, like, an alleged like sex cannibal? Like that can't be good. But that's what Armie Hammer is, and he is all over this movie. And it's weird to see him because it's been a while, because again, alleged sex cannibal. But so the basic gist is you have Hercule Poirot. We actually get a mustache origin story that I'm not going to spoil, but just it's at the top of the film, and we find out why he has the mustache. But he's in London, he's at a blues club, and he sees this sort of meeting between a man and a woman named Jackie, played by Emma Mackey, and a guy named Simon, played by the aforementioned Armie Hammer. She introduces him to her old friend, Lynette, played by Gal Gadot, who is some sort of heiress. What kind of heiress is never really established. But Jackie and Simon are going to get married, but she really wanted him to meet her friend and potentially get some work from her. 6 weeks later, Hercule Poirot is vacationing in Egypt for reasons that, again, aren't made particularly clear. He runs into his good friend, Book, played by Tom Bateman, who is a delight. He's always a delight, and he's wonderful here. He also meets Book's mom, Euphemia, played by by Annette Bening. I didn't even know Annette Bening was in this movie, but there she was. And then he's like, hey, we've got some friends who are on their honeymoon. Why don't you come join us? And then he goes to the party, and it turns out that the newly married couple are Simon and Lynette. They're married now.
Ooh.
Oh, yes, scandalous. But as it turns out, Jackie, the scorned woman, just keeps following them around from place to place. And so in an effort to avoid her, them and the cast of thousands that are following him around, just a great collection of actors, Jennifer Saunders, Russell Brand, Rose Leslie, just a lovely collection of people. But they wind up in a boat on the Nile, like you do. And there's death on the Nile, Rich. It's up to Hercule Poirot to solve the case in all his mustached Frenchness, his French-accented Belgian excitement. And, it's fun. It's perfectly fine. I love a good whodunit, and Branagh's affection for the source material makes it all work. I will say the interior stuff is far superior to any time they're actually supposed to be outside, because it is very, very clearly green-screened, and that, to the point where you just, it's unsettling, just jarring how the switch from interior to exterior and back again. But all that being said, it's a perfectly fine mystery, even though you're probably going to work out how it's playing out pretty early on. But at the same time, like there's something just about, like, you know, attractive famous people dressed to the nines and, you know, in gowns and furs and just lounging around on a boat, drinking cocktails and talking about who murdered who. So if you're into that kind of thing, I think you're going to have a really good time at Death on the Nile. I mean, I certainly did.
Alan Adams talking movies with us. on Pass the Popcorn. Alan, thank you as always. We'll see you again on Wednesday.
Hey, real quick, just so you know, Sheridan made doggy biscuits, and Stella wanted Ginger to have some. We also delivered some for Carrie's 90-pound lap dog as well. So I just wanted to let you know that those were here.
Thank you.
We just wanted to wish you and yours a happy Valentine's Day.
Well, right back at you. And Carrie, don't let Fenway or any of those other studio dogs get their mitts on those.
I shall not.
All right. We'll take a break. Thanks, Al. We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes, sir.